Welcome to the Last Rush Hour podcast. I'm your host, Fred Pilot, author of the recently published ebook, Last Rush Hour, The Decentralization of Knowledge Work in the 21st Century. If you've ever wondered that someday soon you would no longer need to waste time commuting to and from the office and the rush hour would become a thing of the past, the ebook and this podcast are for you. Today, with modern information and communications technology, knowledge work, analyzing data, reading reports, writing and producing presentations, planning and strategizing, and collaborating with colleagues and clients can be done anywhere with a reliable internet connection and whenever one can think, communicate, and be creative and productive. Knowledge workers and their organizations have begun migrating out of the commute and office space. People are increasingly working somewhere all of the time in home offices or in their communities. Some organizations have gone fully virtual, operating without the major expense of dedicated office space. Each podcast will feature a conversation with a notable individual influencing and driving this major shift in how we work in the 21st century information economy. This episode's guests are Allison Maitland and Peter Thompson. They are the authors of Future Work. The expanded, updated version was published in 2014. Its full title is Future Work, Changing Organizational Culture for the New World of Work. And Allison Maitland is a writer, speaker, and conference facilitator, and a former Financial Times journalist who specializes in leadership and the changing world of work. She is director of the Conference Board's European Council for Diversity in Business, a senior visiting fellow at London's Cass Business School, and co-author of the prize-winning book, Why Women Mean Business. Peter Thompson is a leading consultant, speaker, and researcher in the field of new working practices. He is a director of Wise Work Limited, specialist advisors on flexible working, and was director of the Future Work Forum at Henley Business School for 16 years. Prior to that, he was the HR director for digital equipment for Northern Europe. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Hi, Peter. Glad you're with us.
Hi.
Your book is available, by the way, for listeners at futureworkbook.com. I really enjoyed your book. It really tracked a lot to what my book was discussing in terms of the proliferation of information and communications technology and the impact on organizations. It's pretty profound. And there was an excerpt I like to take from page 11 of your book that pretty much describes what your book is about. And certainly jump in and add to it if you want, but you say much has been written about collaborative technology, the web of devices, services, and applications that enable organizations and people to work together more efficiently in the internet era. This book is about the human side of the transition to future work. It is aimed at leaders and managers who want to equip themselves with the thinking and the skills needed to meet the challenges of the new world of work. It also provides practical advice for individuals seeking to rebalance their lives and at the same time work more efficiently. So it seems we've had a real sea change in how knowledge work gets done now that we have working in the cloud and all the tools that knowledge work used to require that were in a centralized setting in an office have now been dispersed globally, essentially, and you can do knowledge work anywhere in the world. And you talk in your book a little bit about in terms of the practical way of adapting to this new world, we have to change organizations and management. You talk about the trust model. Can you talk a little more about what that is in terms of changing how work is managed using the trust model?
The trust principles are great because they reflect a world where we need to give more autonomy to individuals by treating them like adults. If you look at what all the management gurus have said for the last 50 years, they've talked about giving people more responsibility, treating them like adults, giving them autonomy, giving them some more control over how, where, and when they do their work. And that's what future work is about. It's about managing in that way. But some leaders and managers struggle with that because they're used to a command and control culture. And we're talking about one which is much more to do with empowering and supporting people, not telling them what to do, but encouraging them to work their own way.
Would this question of changing management had come up if not for the the proliferation of information and communications technology? Has this basically forced this change?
Well, it's definitely been a driving factor in it all. And it's, I mean, the point of course, is that it's the enabler of an enormous shift in the way that we work, because we can now, a lot of work can be done anywhere, anytime. And even tasks that people are doing where maybe a lot of their work has to be done in a fixed location or at a particular time, there are still other tasks that are part of their overall role that can be done anywhere, anytime. So it gives us those opportunities to work in a very different way, but it doesn't automatically mean that organizations move and make that shift, because as Peter says, you know, there is still a lot of fear amongst managers of sort of losing control over people if they can't see them, if they don't have them sitting in front of their noses. But there are other factors at work as well, not just the technology. I mean, there's a huge amount of pressure for more democratic workplaces generally. I mean, for example, with bring your own device to work, which a lot of people are doing now, that just forces the pace of change with the use of social media and millennial styles of communication, or Gen Y styles of communication and working styles, you know, this sort of desire that there's less deference these days to authority and to hierarchy. So there's been a huge shift there, a generational shift that's taking place as well. People need and want, people of all generations actually need and want to work with much greater choice and control over how they work. So we're arguing for organizations to enable that, because there are huge business benefits that come from doing it. Not just to be nice to people, but because they see big benefits in terms of higher productivity, in terms of lower costs, in cost savings on space, in terms of lower carbon emissions, and many, many other business benefits.
I think back to your point about it, is the technology causing this? I think, as Alison says, the technology in a way is a catalyst. It's speeded up a process that was probably changing anyway with social change. And demographics as well. You're looking now at the much older workforce, people working longer, living much longer. So all these changes are impacting how we work. And then if you put the technology on top of that, it just makes everything happen that much faster. So the revolution we're going through from the information, from the kind of industrial age to the information age, is happening much quicker than the old industrial revolution, where people came off the fields and went into the factories. That took 100 years or so to happen. But in the last decade, really, we've seen a massive change of the way people can work potentially using technology.
That's an excellent point. And how long do you think that this transition is going to play out? It took decades for the shift from the agricultural age to the industrial age to play out. How long do you think this one's going to take before it's fully realized?
Well, we see organizations are very different, moving at very different paces. So it's hard to say, you know, when everybody will be there, or indeed whether everybody will make the shift. But certainly there'll be quite a few dinosaurs, that sort of fall by the wayside along the way. And that's one of the things that we've really noticed, that there's a huge gap really between the organizations that are at the leading edge of this, that are, you know, very far ahead and have completely changed their working model, and those that are still, you know, just beginning to realize that they need to do something about it, but there's still a lot of resistance and they're very slow pace. So it's hard to predict how long it'll take, but it's already happening, and it's already happened in quite a few places. Which is interesting, because then that gives other people, other organisations, examples, which of course we share in our book, examples of how the leaders have done it.
Well, right now a lot of people still are doing the commute, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast may be listening doing their commute. You talk in your book about, in future work, about this being somewhat of a green trend as well, where we're looking to have a smaller carbon footprint, not so much driving and using internal combustion to move our brains to an office to think, when we can basically think anywhere, really. Do you think that's another major factor that's driving this shift?
I think that's an example of the attitudes of the younger generation, which are different from the baby boomers who may still be in senior management positions. The younger generation are much more environmentally aware and question some of the old practices. They say, why do I need to travel to work, sit at a desk and send emails to the people sitting at the desk next door when I could have done it without having to travel? And not just pollute the planet, but waste my time, cause stress, have a working practice which is clearly out of date, which was designed for when we had to sit next to each other. Now in many jobs we don't. Why do we do this? And they're just coming up with these questions, and it's quite difficult for the entrenched managers to give a straight answer, because the only reason is because, hey, we've done this for the last 200 years.
The classic resistance to change, right? This is the way we've always done things.
Exactly. And then given that a lot of organizations now are worried about their green credentials anyway, they're worried about appealing to this younger generation to be able to employ the best of them. They have to answer those questions, or the best of that the next generation are going to go work elsewhere.
It seems very appropriate that we're having this conversation at the same time as the massive climate change summit is taking place in Paris, because this is the biggest challenge that our planet faces. And certainly, you know, future work and shifting, making a shift to more efficient, smarter ways of working is one big contribution that we can all make to saving our planet and saving the future generations.
Might this also change, and I talk about this in my book, how where people actually live and work? Because, you know, in the industrial age, everything was centered around the city and everything's close in because you had to get to the office or the plant. Now that we have this information and communications technology, it basically disperses work. Are we going to continue to see this centralized residential urban pattern that we've had during the industrial age?
Well, there's one important thing I would just say at the start of that is we don't see the death of offices completely. I mean, the old-fashioned office, yes, definitely going the way of the dinosaurs, but people still need to meet. We get a lot out of meeting face-to-face. And I think it's quite interesting that there's no sort of obvious reduction in the number of conferences, particularly, you know, technology conferences that are very big business and where everybody gets together, even though they could actually be using the technology to just speak to each other virtually. So yeah. I don't see, you know, that we'll all be working from home or working, you know, on our own in isolation. I don't think that's going to happen. But Peter, you were going to say something.
Yes, because again, ironically, it's the tech industries that tend to be clustering in Silicon Valley or in certain parts of London or other cities, because the young techie people like to be able to socialize together. However much people may now be able to work at a distance and indeed use social tools to not have to meet friends face to face, the fact is that in the end, we are somewhat herd out meeting other people, and technology is never going to take all of that away.
It's actually about finding the right place, the right time for the kind of work that you're doing. And so we'll see an increase in multifunctional spaces, places where people can meet together, where they can do maybe a little bit of private work or concentrated work, although a lot of that will be done, you know, in their own offices, their own places, their own homes. We're seeing, you know, with the design of new workspaces, really taking into account not only what people are doing in terms of tasks, so having lots of different, you know, activity-based working, so as it's called, having lots of different types of space where people can meet within one large area, but also taking into account personality differences. So, you know, for example, a lot of design is done by extroverts, but people are now recognizing that you've got to take the introverts along with you and have places where people who don't like speaking out in a big brainstorming meeting actually can give their views when they come out of that meeting. Maybe there's a sort of quieter place where they can have a one-to-one conversation and give their feedback and so on. So we'll see a lot of development of these sort of multifunctional places and third spaces, as they're called, or third places, which are somewhere in between a home office and a traditional office.
Well, where would that location be, that in-between location?
Well, it can be in lots of different places. It can be in the middle of cities, in middle of big cities, like the British Library is a great example. Peter and I quite often meet at the British Library because it's Wi-Fi enabled. You can plug plug in there, and it's a great place to work. But it could also be as the examples of South Korea and the Netherlands. But particularly South Korea is a very interesting one because they're building more. They've got more of these sort of smart work hubs, which are on the edge of the big cities, nearer to where people live. So they don't have to make that long commute every day. They can actually go and work in a place that's got all the infrastructure they need, and they can communicate, connect with their colleagues, but without having to make the big commute. So we'll see, and we'll also see places that maybe haven't where there's a bit of spare capacity. I remember hearing about the UK, some of the UK government workers working in sort of spaces that were free within prisons, within places, you know, where you take people before they've been charged, but when they're under arrest. It just sounds a bit funny, but there's some spare space there, so, you know, people can drop in, can do a bit of work, and then, you know, go on to their next meeting, whatever.
So the work may be in locations in communities where people live, not in the central part of an urban area then?
I think, yeah, work is going to maybe get closer to where people live, but not be exclusively in the home. For many people, home is not a good place to work because they have children coming and going, the neighbours disturb them, or they share a small property with several other people. But on the other hand, they don't want to commute into the centre of a city to sit in a large office. So there are local hubs where they can go and work, co-working space where they'll be mixing with people working for other employers or small independent people. And there will still be the offices in the city centre for meeting with colleagues from the own organisation, or obviously meeting with customers, clients, depending on the kind of business you're in. And then there's Starbucks and the other coffee houses and lobbies in hotels and public places, which are being used more and more for meetings.
Well, that'll certainly cut down on the commute, wouldn't it?
Well, absolutely. It would mean that you're traveling when you need to travel, but only when you need to travel. And one of the interesting things that was somebody we were interviewing from Unilever made the point that in the case study we wrote about Unilever, made the point that when you fly a long distance to a meeting, an in-person meeting, the tendency is to want to spin it out because you've come all that way. You know, let's make this go for as long. Let's make it a 3-day meeting, and we'll do all sorts of different things. And much of that, actually, you know, could be unnecessary. You could have done that. You could have done that virtually by using telepresence or one of the other technologies. So, so actually, we do waste quite a lot of time in sort of insisting that things have to be done. If we do insist that they have to be done in person, there's so much can be done really efficiently, virtually, these days. On the other hand, there are certain things that do need to be done in person wherever you can do that.
Right. So it's not an either or, and I think your point was that you made earlier is we've got to find a new balance now with these new tools that we have at our disposal, plus new expectations of how organizations are going to be managed, particularly coming from the millennials, as you pointed out. One of the things in terms of transition I think we're seeing is this debate over, you probably have seen it, over telecommuting, and, you know, does an organization allow for telecommuting? And I kind of see this more as part of the struggle of change in terms of dispersing work out of the office, because telework is kind of, or telecommuting, telework, whatever the term might be, is really kind of a transition between the old and the new, and there's certainly a lot of struggling around that, as you probably noticed, in terms of, you know, whether it's something that an organization will offer and or if it doesn't. You want to say anything on that?
Sorry, I lost you there, so I didn't hear the question, I'm afraid.
Oh.
You were breaking up there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we have a, I don't know, this is marginal quality today on Skype, but we'll do what we can with it. I'm looking at telework. You know, we're seeing quite a bit of debate about telework, telecommuting. Those terms tend to be used interchangeably. Whether an organization permits that, whether it doesn't, there was something in the media a couple years ago about Yahoo basically ending their telework policy in Silicon Valley. Would you agree with me that this whole debate represents more of a broader struggle with this change you're talking about, where information work is being decentralized, dispersed? We're kind of going through this one foot in the industrial age and then one foot in the new information age. So we're having this debate over telecommuting. Do you see it that way?
I think what happened was, once it became possible for people to do work and an email and that became that, people suddenly thought, hey, we could do all our work from home. And telework got a bad name, or telecommuting, because everybody thought, oh, that's it, we'll stay at home and never need to travel again. Well, of course, work isn't like that. So I think what is happening now is that organizations that have recognized that some work can be done remotely, whether it's from home or from a coffee shop or wherever, those organizations have taken a much more relaxed view about where work gets done. And if you trust the individuals to get the work done, then they may choose to telework, in the sense that for 1, 2, 3 days a week, then it may be convenient for them to work from home. It may suit their needs, and it may work. And if we go back to managing people by results, as long as they're getting the results and they're working with colleagues and clients where they need to, then where the physical place of doing a lot of knowledge work is much less important. So they will be partially teleworking. But the idea of thousands of people all just working from home and never coming in to see anybody else, is that's kind of not going to happen on mass notice.
Well, another transitional tension, if you will, that I think is playing out is you're probably seeing a lot of references to work-life balance. And you do talk about it in your book in terms of the scourge of the long hours culture, which I found an interesting description, where people are in the centralized office setting like they were prior to the proliferation of information and communications technology, but they're also using it to work when they get home in the evenings and on weekends. So they feel like they're constantly working, and they're having a hard time trying to come up with some sort of balance in their lives, if you will, where they can attend to personal things but also get their work done. It seems that the expectations of knowledge work being accessible at all times means you must be able to do work at all times, because, again, I'm kind of trailing off here, but could you comment a little bit on that? Do you see that as something as part of this transition we're dealing with?
Yeah, Peter, do you want to go for that?
You might take it.
All right. Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely central. I mean, one of the things that that we talk about is for managers and leaders in this new world of work, it's really important that working anytime and anywhere doesn't become working all the time and everywhere. It's absolutely essential. It's an essential part of their role to make sure that their people are not burning out. And indeed, it's an essential part of any team that's working virtually to make sure that members of the team are not burning out. And I remember hearing a very interesting conversation, you know, one side of a phone conversation in a police station. This guy was saying down the phone, I really think that you're working too much, you know, you're working too hard, you need to slow down, you're always online, you're always on email, you know, just take a break from it, otherwise it'll kill you, you know, it'll burn you out. And of course that is what happens. People are basically are not productive beyond a certain number of hours per day, and your productivity goes way down, and it's a pointless exercise to just try keep on working. Of course, if you're very motivated and you're finishing a project and you're full of energy and you want to do it, then that's absolutely fine. And that's what I meant when I said, you know, treating people as individuals, people are different, and it's not about sticking to rigid hours. And if anybody's, you know, emailing in the middle of the night, that's a bad thing. It might actually work very well for them, but they also need to be aware of the impact that it has on other people. So if a manager, if a leader is sending emails at 1 o'clock in the morning, because that happens to be when they like to work, they must also make it clear that they don't expect the people they're sending it to email back immediately, because that's a killer.
Yeah, I think for me, the test here is who has their finger on the off button on the device, the smartphone, the tablet, the laptop. If it's effectively the manager is controlling when it gets used, he or she is saying, hey, I want you to reply to my emails the weekends, then it's a problem. If the device is allowing the individual to choose when they work, because and then more freedom and flexibility, and what we tend is layer the technology on top of regular, so people go and work 8 to 5 in the office, then come home, and as you say, then end up doing their emails because they haven't had time in the office, because we haven't substituted the new ways of working for the old. We simply added the technology instead of starting again and saying, with using the technology, we can work very differently and more productively. But that means we don't have so many face-to-face meetings. We do some of the old things. We have to take the technology and use it instead of, not just as well as, the old ways of working.
Well, thank you, Peter. I think we're about out of time. Allison, thank you also for being on the call today. Peter and Allison are authors of Future Work, Changing Organizational Culture for the New World of Work. Their book is available at futureworkbook.com. Thank you for being on our podcast today.
Thank you, Fred. Very good speaking to you.
Pleasure.
Okay, thank you.